God, I hope I just go under 5 minutes for the 1500. And so I ended up getting a gold medal and ran 4:59 on 2 months of training. So that was pretty cool.
The Diz Runs With Podcast, episode 216, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With Podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, thanks again to Jabra for sponsoring today's episode. If you've been listening for a little while, you've heard quite a bit about Jabra. They've been a great sponsor here in the early part of 2016. And I don't know what else I can say. The wireless earbuds that they make, especially the Pulse model, which is the model that I have, they're fantastic. You know, they're comfortable to wear. They're easy to get set up. You know, sometimes with the wireless setup, Bluetooth and things like that, it can be a little bit complicated, but these are real easy to get set up, comfortable, waterproof, sweatproof, good sound quality. And, with the Pulse model, they even very accurate heart rate readings. So if you haven't heard of Jabra before, if you're looking to up your headphone game, I would definitely recommend them. And again, as I've mentioned before and mentioned on the show, they are giving away a free pair of the Pulse models, the Jabra Pulse earbuds, at the end of this month. They're giving another random drawing, another random winner. And I look forward to announcing that winner in the first part of March 2016 as this episode goes out. And if you want to get yourself entered into the drawing, all you need to do is head over to jabra.com/dizruns. That's jabra.com/dizruns. Take 20 seconds, enter your name, enter your email address, and bam, you're entered to win. And we'll be picking a winner at the end of February and announcing that winner in the first part of March. So if you haven't entered already, get over to the website and get entered. Now, let's get on with the show. Hey guys, today I'm running with someone who, to put it mildly, has had a rather unique running career. She started running competitively in middle school and found success at the high school and college levels as well. After college, she ran with an Olympic development team and was part of the second place DMR team at the USATF Indoor National Championships. And shortly thereafter, she took about the next 15 years or so off from racing competitively. But recently she's gotten back into racing and is definitely a force to be reckoned with, both at the national and international levels of the Masters track circuit. I'm looking forward to a few laps on the track today with Ms. Jen St. Jean. Jen, thanks for joining us today and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. And guys, if you want to check out Jen's blog, where she's got a lot of stuff going on, running and otherwise, and I'm sure we'll get into some of that, but you can definitely check out her website, which is jenstjean.com, and that's Saint just S-T. And then if you want to connect with her on Instagram or Twitter, you got the same handle in both places. It's Jen St. Jean, but in this case, the Saint is spelled out. So it's Jen, S-A-I-N-T, Jean on Instagram and Twitter. And as always, you know, I'll have those links on the show notes for this episode. If you get confused or you get lost or you're on one and you think that maybe this isn't the right person, just head over to dizruns.com/216 and I'll have the links directly to where you can get in touch with Jen. So Jen, the way we always get things started on the show is to ask what for some folks is a straightforward and relatively easy question, and some people it's a little bit more of a head scratcher and a hemmer and a har. And that's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
The 1,000 meters.
Okay.
And it's my favorite because the 800 meters feels like it's just an all-out sprint. And the 1,000, it takes a little bit more of a calculation on how you're going to execute your race. It's not just go out hard and hang on for dear life. Mm-hmm. You have to have a little bit of strategy involved in your pacing, your planning. So I've had a lot of fun racing 1,000 meters.
Is that a distance that's raced often on the master's level? Or because I worked in college track before on the sports medicine side of things, and definitely am aware of some of the more unique distances. Every once in a while you run into a 500 meter race or something like that, but I don't think I've ever seen 1,000 meters run competitively before.
So in high school, it is the indoor track race that's run. I mean, and that's where I sort of fell in love with it, was in high school. after high school and college, you might get one or two college meets where they'll throw it in because they know, you know, some athletes really love running that. Mm-hmm. And at UMass Amherst, where I went to college, we did have a school record for the 1,000 meters. And I was on the all-time top five list at one point, which I'm sure has come to pass now. Mm-hmm. But now, so far this year for this indoor season, my first two races were the 1,000 meters, which was a lot of fun. And I actually checked with the world masters rankings, and I was like, you know, are you going to carry a ranking for the 1,000 meters? And they said probably not. Mm. So, you know, you move on and you start racing your 800, your mile, your 1500 and carry on. But there's still, I think I have a couple more opportunities to run the 1000 and I'll absolutely eat them up for sure.
So is 1000 then, is that more often run indoors than versus outdoors?
Yeah, I've never seen it run outdoors. It's purely an indoor track event.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Which indoor track is probably my favorite of all three seasons. Yeah. For sure.
What do you like about running indoors so much?
I think it's my height. Mm. Being 5'2.5", running the ovals on very tight turns just works really well for my height.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of gives you a little bit of an advantage over some of the taller women that have the longer strides that really can open it up on the straightaways outside. But if they're always running the turns, it definitely, I can see how that would help you out a little bit.
Exactly.
So, Jen, as we mentioned at the beginning, or in the intro, you know, talking about, you know, you had this career that was going pretty well. You're moving up, and then you took some time off. I guess I've got to ask, that kind of the elephant in the room. What was the reasoning behind that? Why did you kind of step away from running competitively and racing competitively when you did?
I think that there were a lot of reasons. There wasn't just one particular reason. Some of the thoughts that sort of went through my head were that, you know, I was a clean athlete. I've always been a clean athlete. Mm-hmm. And while I was really close to qualifying for Olympic trials, I knew that I didn't have any specific names, of course, but that not all the athletes were clean. So that was certainly a thorn in my side, that I could be working so hard and yet still fall short of my dream because somebody was cheating. Mm-hmm. The other thing with that is that in the world of track and field, typically only, you know, the top couple of runners in each event will be able to obtain some level of a sponsorship. But it almost felt like if you weren't number one, then it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Number two, number three, four, or five often never get the support that they need financially to make it happen. And so we were trying to get support for our team. We were sponsored by Reebok, but what that sponsorship meant was that they paid for our travel, our clothing, our shoes, which was huge. That was enormous. But I didn't have a salary. So I was still working, you know, 40 to 60 hours a week in a running store. Mm-hmm. And I just graduated from college, and so I'm paying off my college loans, and I'm still living at home with mom and dad, and I'm thinking, did I go to college so that I could live at home with mom and dad? Like, this isn't really how I envisioned everything. And so after a couple of years of sort of struggling artist, if you will, of trying to live out this Olympic dream, I said, you know, if it does happen or if it doesn't happen, you know, will everything that I put into it be worth it if I'm still going to come up short because of cheaters? Mm. So the cheaters thing came back again. And, you know, also at that point in time in my life, I had been best friends with my husband since high school. We were friends in high school, friends in college, friends after college, and things started shifting and changing. And he lived outside New York City and I lived in Boston. And so, you know, I said, well, I think I'd really like to pursue a career, settle down, and that's what I did.
What was the career path that you were heading on at that point?
Well, similar to you, I have a degree in exercise science. Mm. And so, and I was very passionate about that degree. But when I graduated in 96, the economy was kind of taking a turn. And so my focus was on corporate wellness, and a lot of companies were cutting back on their wellness programs. So getting a job was kind of hard. I reached out to a headhunter. And she said, well, I see that you taught a statistics class in college, and you're really good, strong in math and science. I have this job in financial services working on data and analysis. Would you like to go for the interview? And I said, sure. So I went, and we ironically ended up talking about running and my running career during the interview. And I left that day with a job offer in financial services.
But a slight difference from exercise science and kind of, I guess, what you'd been into at that point.
Yes, for sure.
So were you there? Were you doing a financial service type of thing for a long period of time? Was it a temporary job, or how did?
No, I ended up staying with it for over 10 years. And, I continued to work full time, 60 hours a week, even after my oldest was born. Mm. So she was in a great program. It was like early schooling all day long. They had a curriculum. It was fantastic. She thrived. Everything was great. And then I had baby number two, and baby number one was starting kindergarten. Mm. And kindergarten was half day. And so I would have one at daycare and one at half day school. And sort of the stress of my family. My husband also works, 60 hours a week in financial services. Mm-hmm. And so for the two of us combined, it was just becoming a little bit too much. And I decided to hang up my financial services shoes and start. I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. Mm. And within 6 months, that didn't last very long, and I started my own company.
we'll get into that in just a second, because I it's another similar trade, I guess. We've got the entrepreneurial bug kind of going both sides here. But during that time, while you were doing the financial services things and whatnot, was running still, obviously not competitively, but was running still part of something you did, or did you kind of really take a giant step away from the sport?
No, I still ran whenever possible. Mm. I didn't really enter a lot of road races, 5Ks, that sort of thing, because I knew that I was super competitive and I couldn't just go into a race and not compete. Mm. And I really didn't want the competition part of running anymore. Of course, every time there was a JP Morgan Chase Corporate Challenge, my colleagues knew what my background was. They're like, she's our ringer. And so for about 2 months before the Chase Corporate Challenge, I would really, amp up my training and do some workouts. And I always had a really good showing at the JP Morgan Challenge. but then actually there was one really special event. I worked for PIMCO Funds, which is based in Newport Beach, California. Mm. And they were purchased by a big German insurance company, Allianz. And Allianz has companies all over the world. And every 4 years on a non-Olympic year, they hosted a corporate Olympics.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the corporate Olympics, the year that I worked for them, was in Milan, Italy. And so everyone had to like try out or have like a time that was worthy of them inviting you to this championship. And so I was able to represent the United States for the 1500 meters. And so again, I was working crazy hours up until this corporate Olympics. And so again, 2 months before the corporate Olympics, I was like, wow, I got to drop some 200s out on the track and get myself ready for this race. And, God, I hope I just go under 5 minutes for the 1500. And, so I ended up getting a gold medal and ran 4:59 on 2 months of training. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. Is that something that maybe you don't, I guess that's why I'm going to ask, but is that type of thing something that's common in some of those big, maybe not to that level of having a corporate Olympic setting, but like having some races or things like that for people that are in certain companies and things like that?
I mean, I think the JP Morgan challenge is probably any, you know, big firm probably puts together a team to participate in that. Mm. They have different awards for like vice president, CEOs. So sort of everyone gets involved in it, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
And so is that, speaking of that challenge specifically, is it mostly races, or are there other, you know, strength components, or what kind of events do they have?
So that one's just a 5K challenge.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's usually about once a year.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I mean, if it's, you know, being in the health sciences and things like that, and both of us, I guess, but, you know, anything that encourages people to be active is a good thing for sure.
Yeah, I think so.
So then kind of stepping back into where we were before we kind of took this little detour, but, you started your own, started working from home. What were/are you doing with that?
So, I come from a long line of sewers, and it's something I've always just sort of been able to do. If, you know, I was, you know, a new house and I was looking for curtains, couldn't find what I was looking for, I would just make them. If I needed something and I couldn't find it, I would just make it. Mm-hmm. And my littlest one was 6 months old, and my best friend was getting married. And I decided, you know, I think I'm going to make little bags for everybody in the bridal party. Mm-hmm. And so I started off with that little project. And then at that point in time, the fashion industry was going through this big bag thing. And I've never been one to really carry a big bag. I've mm-hmm. always had these tiny little bags. And I need a small little bag. I'm going to make one. So I sort of dreamed up this little idea, this little pattern in my head, and put it together and shared a picture of it on Facebook. And everyone started asking me to make them bags. Mm. And so I was like, well, I'm kind of onto something here. And so I would wait for the check to come in the mail and send off their bag that I made. And so I need a little bit more efficient way of managing this, and started looking into, you know, what it would be to open up my own company and work from home. And it was quite a blessing. It got me through, you know, where I've always been this very, you know, go-getter type person. You know, just being at home didn't seem like it was quite enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, you know, having kids is a joy and taking care of them, but I didn't want it to just be that. And this gave me that sort of necessary distraction. I wasn't competing at that time. And so it was very helpful.
Definitely. Definitely. And sounds like it's something obviously that you enjoy, that you're talented in, and maybe a little bit less of a job sometimes than something to do. And you're still able to, it is a job, but I mean, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, it's not a big onerous task to go to work when you're doing something that you enjoy.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I've been asked by people, well, you know, your running career is taking off so well, why don't you just focus on running and, you know, maybe not do the bag business anymore? And the thing is that the bag business is the perfect offset to my training, because mm-hmm. it is low key, it is relaxing. My heart rate can lower to like 47 beats per minute while I'm sewing, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. And when, you know, at the end of cross country season, I hurt my back and I was out of running for 30 days. This was this past fall. Mm-hmm. And so I sewed more and got a lot of stuff done, and it felt really good. And I never felt like, oh, I'm not running, so I'm angry and miserable, and why can't I run? I just mm-hmm. sort of put my energy into allowing my body to heal and focused on my business a little bit more. So I think with everything in my life, I always call it the balance, you know, mm-hmm. and I think everyone does struggle with, you know, their balance between work and family and running and everything else that's going on. And so without the sewing business, I wouldn't have the balance. It would just be, you know, all in running, all in family, and it really would lack the balance.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, balance in anything is certainly key. So you at some point in the last, I think if I remember from looking at your blog and whatnot, about the last year and a half, something like that, the itch started coming back and started running competitively again. What brought that change about to you?
Well, I guess it was about two and a half years ago. I had a hysterectomy. Mm. because my health wasn't good, and that organ was behaving very badly and really holding me back from just living a normal life. Mm. And so I had to make the decision of what I wanted, and I really wanted to be the best mom I could be, and happy and healthy. So I had the surgery, and about 4 weeks later was given clearance to run again, because again, I'd always been running. And so, mm-hmm. So I got the clearance to run, and finally I was able to consistently train without feeling sick and miserable. And so I did that for about a year, where I was just training consistently, and I entered into a few 5K races and just to test the water, see mm-hmm. how I was doing. And I was doing really well. And so about a year ago, I reached out to a coach that I had been in contact with before, when I had thought that I wanted to make a comeback, sort of in the middle when I was working in financial services, mm-hmm. but it just never panned out, and said, you know, I have a goal. I'm about to turn 40, and I want to run faster as a master. Mm. I want to kill my younger self times. And he said, let's do it. And that's what I've been working towards.
How close are you? Have you knocked any old previous times off yet? How's that goal going?
Yeah. Well, my 6K time, and again, I'm not much of a I consider the 6K a distance mm-hmm. event. Not much of a distance runner, but my 6K time I've killed in like by over a minute.
Oh, wow.
From when I was 20 something. And I'm working really hard towards my 1500 meter goal. Last year I took 20 seconds off of my 1500 meter time, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And so I'm at 4:37 for the 1500, and I need to get another 20 seconds this year. If I break it this year, I don't know that I will, but to 4:19. 4:19 is the bar that I need to pass.
Wow, that's a different speed stratosphere than I know anything about, for sure.
Yeah, it's fun. I really love going all out. This past weekend, I ran an 800, and I won the race. And I knew that I had another race coming up after it, so I kind of held back a little bit. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go fast, but I didn't want to kill myself. And I managed to run a 2:23 800 meters, and so that felt really good. I was like, wow, that came easy enough. Like I could do this. This is going well. And again, in the 800 meters, getting that next 10 seconds mm-hmm. is going to be torture.
Right.
You know, getting this next 20 seconds in the 1500, it's going to be torture. It's not going to come easy. And I know that, but, mm-hmm. But it's certainly, I'd rather reach for that goal and come up short than say, oh, you know, maybe I can run, you know, 4:25 or,
right.
you know, I want to set my goals high because I think I'll come closer or even possibly surprise myself and pass it. So, mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I heard somewhere, I can't remember where, but it was something along the lines of like, if you set your goals at what you think you can achieve, you may or may not achieve them, and that's fine. But if you set them kind of almost beyond your wildest expectations, you may never get there, but you'll certainly find out how far you can go. And a lot of times it'll be a whole lot farther than if you were to set those more safe goals and be like, oh, it would be great to do this. And
yeah,
so it's cool to set those big goals and work towards them. And yeah, it's going to be tough, but I mean, you know, you do what you do and you see what you got and you know, it's a good time along the way.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, as history sort of shows, I mean, so I had a great time running, you know, learning to run in middle school. It came easy. I loved it. It was fun. The people were great. Went on to run in high school and, you know, and I did really well. But, you know, I wasn't necessarily a state standout. I mean, mm-hmm. people weren't, you know, saying my name like, oh, have you seen, you know, this girl run? And I set my sights really high. I said, well, I want to run at a Division I university. And, you know, some people are like, well, you know, okay, well, good luck with that, you know, thinking like there's no way. Mm-hmm. And so my freshman year in college, I was a walk-on. She couldn't recruit me. I didn't have any money. And my freshman year with three other teammates, we set the school record in the 4x800. Mm. And I was a walk-on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty cool to be able to, you know, come up that high above everybody's expectations. And then the next 3 years of college, I was on, you know, partial scholarship, which was fantastic.
Right.
And then even after, I mean, again, I don't think anybody would have thought that I would have been that close to qualifying for the Olympic trials. Mm-hmm. It just, well, it was always a dream of mine, and every little kid, of course, you know, whether it's playing for, you know, the NBA or, mm-hmm. you know, Major League Baseball. I mean, we all have these sort of childlike dreams to come that close to a childhood dream. I don't feel like I lost or I gave up, or, you know, even though I didn't quite reach it, I feel really proud of how close I got.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's, you know, there's plenty of people who would love to have been, you know, probably myself included, to be able to have been, you know, in your shoes and be as close as you got. So it's certainly an accomplishment to be, like you said, not to be upset about, not to feel like a failure, but to be proud about and look back fondly on.
Yeah, exactly.
Before I get to the next thing, Jen, just want to take a minute and remind everybody to head over to jabra.com/dizruns if you haven't done so already. If you're on your mobile, real easy to do while you're going. As long as you're not driving. If you're driving, you can wait. But head over to jabra.com/dizruns and get yourself entered to win a free pair of the Jabra Pulse headphones. Giving those away at the end of the month. Thanks to Jabra for sponsoring today's episode. So you've mentioned a couple times, you know, you talk about the 6K being a long race for you and enjoying the 1,000 meters and 800 meters and things like that. You know, I've heard a couple things where you've said, talking about even recently with the injury, running cross country and whatnot, and the three phases of running being cross country and indoor track and outdoor track. I guess I don't know exactly how I want to ask this. You obviously run cross country still once in a while. Is that yes, accurate?
Yes, yes.
What's if you enjoy the shorter stuff, you enjoy the track stuff more than cross country, what still gets you out there to do some cross country races?
I think cross country makes you tougher. Mm. I really do. I mean, it's very different than a road race. You certainly won't be quite as fast. Mm-hmm. The ground sort of almost absorbs you in every stride you take. So it takes more effort, more strength to run cross country. I know that some middle distance people disagree that higher mileage for a middle distance runner has any benefit at all. Mm-hmm. But certainly in my comeback, in increasing my endurance, my strength, my overall, the blood flow to my mm-hmm. muscle regions and all of that, running longer distances has certainly improved my body and how it responds to exercise and increasing my overall strength. I think because I started in cross country in the eighth grade, it's been really hard to let go of it. Mm. Just before the 6K out in California this year, I said, this is my last cross country season. I'm never doing this again. And then it comes to an end and you're like, oh, it's over. And, you know, I can't wait for next year. And it's one of those things that I think most runners have a love-hate relationship with cross country. It's, you know, it's hard to be all in and totally in love with it. It just, because it hurts,
right?
You know, it beats you in places that you're like, oh, how did that happen? So it's good.
Good, good. What has been some of the differences that you've noticed between competing at a high level in the masters division as opposed to, you know, back when you were competing in college and just out of college, working towards possibly, you know, Olympic trials and things like that?
I feel like the competition is increasing immensely. More and more runners are realizing that it's not over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think back when I was in my 20s and I thought of masters running, I mean, I had this very warped perception of what a masters runner looked like, how fast or how slow they were. It didn't seem like it was anything that I wanted to be a part of. Mm-hmm. But what I've found is that being with these runners, they are just like me. You know, while maybe we're not quite as fast as we were when we were in our 20s, and I say yet because I'm hoping that I can still do that, but we're really fast, and we give a lot of those 20-year-olds a run for their mm-hmm. money. And so it goes to show, you know, the strength of a runner, and that, you know, it's never too late. I mean, you can hang up your shoes for 15 years and still make a reasonable comeback at your health, at your fitness. And I think, you know, more and more runners, as if friends of mine that have given up their, you know, racing days, are seeing me do this, and they're, I remember what that was like. I remember all these friends, and I want to be a part of it. And so I'm seeing a lot more people try again. And I'm even seeing some of the familiar faces of people that I raced against back when I was in my 20s. And that's a lot of fun. But I think it's the same elements that make you run competitively in your 20s as when you're in your 40s or 50s. It's really the friendships. Mm-hmm. Friendships, hands down, is the best part of it. You know, I can go to any track meet and end up leaving with five or six new friends. It's just, that's the kind of crowd we roll with.
Right, right. I was just gonna ask about, you know, seeing people from back 20 years ago, if you're running into them now, which is cool. That's a cool kind of way to reconnect with obviously mutual passions and just, you know, being able to catch up, and that's a really cool dynamic that what you're doing and just Masters running in general can kind of bring to the table.
Yeah. So back in my Olympic development days, there were four of us that were all running about the same time for the 800 meters, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And that was the second place team, DMR team. And so recently somebody had tweeted a picture of me seeing my Olympic development coach, and they saw the picture on Twitter and they were like, oh my God, that's Jen, and totally found me and reconnected with me. And as it turns out, you know, we have kids roughly the same age. She's just getting back into competitive racing as well. Mm. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to meet up at a race soon, because we're actually at the exact same level today. Mm. Our times are spot on the same. So we're totally going to be going neck and neck again. And I love it, because I love her so much. And, you know, it doesn't matter who wins, but, you know, just to have her there and that same friendship is just fantastic.
What, for people that maybe might be on the fence of maybe looking into doing some shorter stuff, you know, especially into the Masters type of division, are there easy to find, you know, Masters track events, or is there a barrier to entry? Do you have to run a certain pace in order to be welcomed at an event like this, or, you know, the different events that there are? How do you find that kind of thing for anybody that might be listening that would be interested in something like that?
Well, the most amazing part about Masters is that there is no time qualifying to participate in any of the events, even at the World Championships. Mm. Now, that being said, they have trials and finals. So only the fastest runners will make it into the finals, but everybody is welcome to participate. Mm. And I love that so much, because that is a testament to the people who attend.
Right.
And by putting up huge barriers, it's sort of self-defeating, in that some people may say, well, I may never run that fast, but you know, if there's no qualifying time, well, at least they'll give it a shot. And then who knows what will happen.
Right.
So I think it's fantastic that way. I think, you know, in the sport of running, the marathon has sort of taken, you know, stage front. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a marathoner. Yes, I have run one marathon, but I ran it with a friend. So I was training with a friend. This was during my my healing days, that first year back after my surgery. And so I met this friend at a track, and she was doing these workouts. And I said, oh, I'll do the workouts with you, and I'll do the training with you. And I said, well, if I'm doing all these workouts and all the training, why don't I just run the marathon with you? And she's like, would you really do that? And I was like, yeah, of course. Yeah, we'll go out and we'll run 26 miles. It'll be fun. And so at the beginning of the race, she's like, Jen, you know you can go ahead of me. And I'm like, why would I do that? Then I'll just be running this thing all by myself. Mm-hmm. That won't be any fun. So stride for stride, you know, we ran her pace and ran the marathon together. And I never want to do one again.
Which marathon was it?
It was Newport, Rhode Island.
Okay.
And the first half marathon was scenic and glorious. The second half was all in these back streets, and it was lonely and depressing. So I was really glad she was there with me. But, you know, it was fun, and the weather was great, and we had a fantastic time. And, you know, I enjoyed doing it with her, but I don't foresee myself wanting to compete at a competitive level in that race.
Gotcha. To kind of tie back to what I was just asking, for people that are interested, where can they find out more about, or do you even know to find information?
Yeah, I mean, every state sort of has a USATF chapter, and each chapter has open and master's events. There's also mastersrankings.com, and just this past quarter, they actually have a list of races that they've, you know, they're putting up and gathering where competitors are entering their races that allow masters athletes to compete. More recently, I've been finding my races on directathletics.com. And on that website, you can click on any college race, for example, and you can see whether or not open athletes are allowed to participate. And I consider myself an open athlete, not necessarily a master's athlete, because masters are considered open. And you can always look at the previous year's times to see if it's something you want to participate in. But certainly the ones that are designated masters, you'll find people at every ability and age. At the indoor masters national championship, you will see a relay team of ages 95 to 100. And they're doing the, you know, 4x200. And it is just so empowering to watch someone at that age still competing. And it's my inspiration because I want that to be me. I want to be running now, and I want to be running when I'm 90. I want to be that person. And I think it's pretty cool that, you know, that they have those kinds of events.
Yeah, no, I think that it's great to shine whatever spotlight we can on those types of folks. Because I think, I mean, as runners, like, I think that that's probably all of our goals. Like, if we are running and have any ounce of enjoyment out of it at all, like, we want to keep doing that for as long as possible. And obviously, you know, as you get to that type of age, like, your pace is going to slow down, and how much running volume, all that kind of stuff is going to change, but you can still get out there. You can still push yourself. You can still just get the joy from doing it. And I can imagine that would be the kind of thing. I'm sure that the roof is, you know, people are just going crazy when those, that group is out there running.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody is piled around the track, just cheering them on. Like, you know, you're doing this for all of us. Like, thank you so much for being here and participating and being awesome at 95.
Yeah. Wow. That's definitely something to strive for. No question about it.
Yeah.
So, another question, kind of looking through your blog, it was, I can't remember exactly what the date was, maybe sometime last fall or whatever, you wrote a pretty lengthy post about some of the nutrition struggles that you had, and you know, we don't need to get all the details, but you just some of the things I've seen, and you talk on your about page about enjoying cooking, and you know, so again, kind of looking through some of the blog posts, some of the nutrition types of things. What role have you found personally? Because I'm a huge believer in the power of you know, what we eat and the quality of the food we eat and things like that, and how that affects, you know, not only running and just health, but life in general. But what have you found in your studies and in your kind of experiments on yourself and with in and around your family when it comes to kind of the role and the value of nutrition and eating healthy and that type of thing, both in running and beyond?
Well, having an exercise science background, but I think, you know, it started well before that. I mean, I've long been a reader of Runner's World magazine, and I was probably the only person in the ninth grade that read Nancy Clark's, you know, nutrition guidebook for runners. You know, I'm probably the only ninth grader that ever read that book. But I've always been pretty interested in nutrition and how the body works and making sure that, you know, I was always properly fueled. And something that I didn't quite understand when I was younger is that whole carbo loading thing that happens, you know, the night before, two nights before a race, and how terrible that was for me personally. Again, I mean, I was always a very tiny person, and we didn't quite know, you know, back then that I could quite possibly have an allergy to eating wheat. Never would have occurred to anyone to look for that, of why, you know, I was always so tiny, or why I wasn't absorbing all this healthy stuff that I was fueling my body with. It's like, well, you know, I take an iron supplement and, you know, and I'm eating very healthy. Why am I not gaining weight, or, you know, have such low iron counts? And it really was an absorption issue. And so after a very long struggle with that, I started experimenting on my own and doing more and more research and came to the conclusion that, holy cow, I am totally allergic to wheat or gluten or some combination of those foods. And as soon as I took those out of my diet, suddenly, you know, I started feeling more healthy. My iron count went through the roof to the point where the nutritionist was like, you need to back off your iron supplements. You know, you're absorbing it, you know, unbelievably. Right. Whereas in college, they check your serum ferritin level. And your serum ferritin should be, you know, 40s or above for a runner. And mine was 4. Mm. And that was not good. Right. So I mean, I struggled a lot with iron deficiency. And certainly, you know, given my little height and my little body frame and being, you know, in the third grade and them thinking I was a kindergartner, you know, it all makes sense now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was definitely a struggle then and growing up. So for me, you know, I don't know, I think a lot of people are starting to realize this too, is that your heritage has something to do with what your body needs to properly fuel itself. And, you know, there are certain people that have, you know, sugar cravings and things that I just don't have, but things that I do crave are, you know, meat and fat. And I don't know why, but my body just seems to operate better when I'm eating, you know, meat, bacon. Bacon is my favorite, you know, so, and it's all always in moderation. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm eating bacon every single day, but it's something that I totally enjoy and feel, you know, very happy about eating. I eat a lot of eggs and, you know, I do eat, you know, oatmeal, and I did find some great gluten-free bread, which I'm very pleased about. So I can now, you know, have sandwiches or, you know, things like that. For dinner, you know, it always centers around a protein and a vegetable. And, you know, that's just, we don't eat out a lot. I do a lot of the cooking at home. And my littlest one actually has a tree nut allergy, and so she has tree nuts, which makes eating out difficult. She would go into anaphylactic shock, so that's always a struggle with eating out. So, yeah, I mean, I generally live a life of eating things in moderation. I don't do a lot of sweets, but I do love sweets, you know, certainly make a handful of, you know, gluten-free macaroons or, you know, things like that, to nibble on. And, yeah.
Well, and I mean, with making your own stuff, I mean, even when you're making, you know, quote unquote junk food, it's still, you know, when you're using good quality ingredients, I mean, it's just, it's, I don't want to say that it's good for you. It's not that it's becomes a health food because you made it yourself, but you know, there's a whole lot less chemicals and a whole lot better quality of ingredients when you're in control than when you get something out at a restaurant or at the store or anything like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, yeah, probably my one junk food, that I buy regularly are corn chips. I don't know why corn chips in guacamole are just like, it's a weakness.
Well, you can have a lot worse of weaknesses than that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, as we're kind of starting to wrap things up, Jen, I'd love to ask you to put on kind of the fortune teller hat a little bit. What's the next year plus look for you? Obviously the big overarching goal is to continue to get faster and kind of knock some of those times off from back in, you know, 20 years ago you know, be faster now than you were then. But what are the kind of more of the bigger overarching goal, big races that you're planning or anything like that kind of looking forward?
Well, another special group of events that they have for masters runners is called the Masters Invitational Program. And that's also available on USATF's website. And what that program is that at certain elite open meets, they will select one particular race and they will run a master's age division. The age division could be 40 to 44. It could be 50 to 55. I don't know if they've gone older than that. I'm not sure in the past. But this year, for example, the team that I run with, Westchester Track Club, we have a Masters 4x400 and we're competing at the Millrose Games. Mm. And that's going to be so much fun. I mean, I've only read about the Millrose Games for, you know, my entire running career. And so to be a participant in any event at that meet is just an honor. It's so exciting. I know a lot of the other teams that we'll be racing against. So it's like, you know, racing against your family, and mm-hmm. we're going to have so much fun. And to be on a stage like that, I do think of it as a stage, is just fantastic. In addition to that, the indoor national championships out in Portland, I'm planning on running the Women's Masters 1500. They're having that's another invitational program. And then this year at the Olympic trials on day two is also the Women's 1500 meters Masters. Oh, wow. That they're running. So that is, you know, that almost brings me full circle. You know, while it's not my Olympic trials, again, just to participate in an event like that will just be a dream come true. And it's at University of Oregon, which mm-hmm. is also like, you know, running Mecca.
Right.
I mean, you know, all things point to University of Oregon. So to be on that stage running mm-hmm. at the Olympic trials in the 1500 is the dream come true right there.
No, yeah, that was, as soon as you said that, that was the first thing I think of, was like, wow, like this is your, again, you're not going to go to the Olympics after it, but it's right. it's the Olympic trial stage. That's a pretty, pretty cool stage to be running on.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. So I have to, you know, train and, mm-hmm. And run my tail off, to make sure that I qualify for that, because these events do have, a qualifying right. that only the, only 6 to 8 runners will be accepted to participate in that event. And now I'm 41, so who knows who will turn 40 this right. year and be, you know, the young one in. So it's never a sure thing, mm-hmm. and that makes it exciting. And I know that we have a lot of fast runners, you know, coming up into the 40 to 44 age category, and what doesn't hurt you makes you faster. So
definitely. You say it's never a sure thing. So I'm assuming that means that, you know, they're going to take like the 6 or 8 fastest people. There's not like a time qualification standard.
Well, there is a time qualification to even be considered.
Okay.
And that time qualification is, it is a 5:20 1500. Or a 5:40 mile mm-hmm. time. So I've already done that.
Right.
So, you know, the qualifying standard is there, but that's not a sure thing. Mm-hmm. So.
Gotcha. So I've got to ask, as we're getting ready to wrap this up, cross country in the fall. Yeah, are you going to do cross country again this year?
Yeah, I'm going to do it again.
that's fantastic. At the master's level, is it something that's competitive? Like, is there a lot of women that are running cross country in the masters, or is it a little bit sparser field, or how does that work?
It's pretty packed. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly the number of runners that made it out to California to compete at the national championship for masters, but there were a lot. There were probably 300 plus runners. Wow. Of all age categories. Mm-hmm. And the top 5, so I came in 5th this year, but within the top 5, we were all, you know, within seconds of each other, mm-hmm. and it was grueling and painful. And yeah, I mean, to have, so there was also the 6K national championship up in Saratoga, and we all came within seconds of each other.
Wow.
And all of us were under 6 minute per mile pace. Mm. So I think we were roughly like 5:55 pace, 5:50 to 5:55 mm. pace, which is moving pretty quickly.
Especially on cross country as opposed to on the
yeah,
road.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if that had been translated to a road, I'm not sure what that would have been equivalent of, but yeah, it was super competitive. Mm. In that 6K race, we changed first place position so many times in those back hills. I can't even tell you. I mean, being in that top crowd at that race, I was like, who's going to win this thing? This is crazy. I mean, first place just kept changing hands so many times. It was so exciting to be in and to watch, mm-hmm. you know? Wow. It's a lot of fun. It's very competitive.
Well, but again, you know, if even if it's not always the favorite event for you, at least, or maybe the training, maybe is that what the struggle is? Because it sounds like you had a blast running some of these events.
Yeah, I mean, so my struggle, and I kind of put it out there on Facebook, was I was like, I don't even get the point of cross country. What is the point of this? Because in the beginning part of the indoor track season, like, I'm really struggling. Mm. And part of that is that, you know, being an 800 meter runner, you're talking fast twitch fibers.
Right.
You know, we're firing boom, boom, boom. And my body is stuck, used to running, you know, 550 pace. Mm. And, you know, in running 550 pace, is very different from running 223 800 pace, which
right.
is the equivalent of like a 447 mile time.
Mm-hmm.
So to shift gears that much it takes a little while for the muscles to go, oh, right, I'm supposed to go fast, you know? And so I'm struggling a little bit with that right now, but I know over the course of the next month, it's going to remember what it's supposed mm-hmm. to do, and that endurance is going to pay off.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's probably one of those, like, right at the beginning it's tough, but over the course of the indoor season, I imagine there's legitimate benefits that'll show up.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see, you know, how the rest of my indoor season unfolds, and you know, I think my base times of 3:04 for the 1,000 and 2:23 for the 800. That's a good start. That's a good place to start. And so, you know, it's only going to get faster from here.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, guys, if you want to watch, follow along from the sidelines, watch as, Jen continues to get faster. JenStJean.com. Again, that's just STJean.com, and connect with her on Instagram, Twitter for updates, see how she's doing, connect, say hi. And that's @JenStJean. And this one is spelled out. So Jen, S-A-I-N-T Jean. And again, links will be at dizruns.com/216. So, Jen, thanks for taking the time today. It was a lot of fun. Learn a little bit more about Masters Track. I've had a couple of Masters athletes on the show before, and it's always fun to hear, you know, folks who are continuing to compete at a high level, even as they get older. Because I mean, it's tougher. You got, you know, life, family, work. You got so many things that compete with your time, and it's just really cool to see what you're doing and to learn a little bit more about you. And definitely, we'll be continuing to follow along. And obviously, I think for me, at least, the takeaway is that I'm excited to see how things go at the Olympic trials. I think that's going to be a lot of fun for you, and definitely looking forward to cheering you on as you go.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty, take care.
Take care.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed this conversation between Jen and myself. And as always, I'd love to know what you think. What stood out to you? What is your biggest takeaway from this episode? For me, I think it's the desire to just, you know, the motivation, the desire, whatever you want to call it, to just stay active, to keep pushing myself as I get older. You know, it's easy to think that as we get a little bit older, that we'll you know, won't be able to keep up with ourselves from 20 years ago. And, you know, just hearing about and seeing how she's pushing herself, how Jen's pushing herself to be faster as a master. I think that's very inspiring. I think that's something that, that I need to, you know, really push to and aspire to do. You know, I've talked a few times about my goals for getting to Boston, and I can't remember if I've said it on the show or not, I probably have, but that, you know, for me to qualify for Boston, I need to get a little bit faster. I need to get a little bit older so that the qualifying times, become more manageable. But why set myself up for that? Why say that there's no way that I can run, you know, a 3:10, which is what I need to run now to get into Boston? Like, maybe I can, maybe I can't, but why not set that as a goal? Why not push towards that? And if I end up, you know, in 5 years that I can get under 3:15, then I've qualified, you know? But why say that I can't? There's no way I can do it until I can get to, you know, until I'm old enough to get to a 3:20 or 3:25 mark. And that's kind of what my takeaway was from this episode, that age is a number, but we can still push ourselves, and we can keep getting faster. We can keep getting stronger. We can keep resetting our own limits and our own boundaries, as long as we don't box ourselves in with a preconceived notion of what is possible. So, I mean, that was my takeaway. And again, I would love to hear what is yours? What stood out to you from the conversation? What, What's your little nugget from today's conversation? So shoot me a tweet with that information. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com, or head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/216, and leave a comment right there for everybody to see. And we'll get a little discussion going on the show notes page for this episode. While you're on the show notes, or while you're on the go, or wherever you are, get your, you know, whatever device you're listening to this on, get your head over to jabra.com/DizRuns. If you're on your phone, you can just tap the album artwork and there'll be a link right there. If you're on the computer, there should be a link on the show notes. There should be a link just about anywhere that you can find this that'll take you right there. And that way, you can show Jabra that you appreciate the support that they're lending to me and to the show. It's definitely appreciated. And I appreciate you taking that extra step, that extra 20, 30 seconds out of your day. I mean, I know you're busy and it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. It means a lot. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for signing up, and good luck. Hope that I can call your name at the end of this month to announce that you have won a free pair of the Jabra Pulse earbuds from Jabra. So with that, let's wrap this thing up, guys. It's been a lot of fun. Hope that you enjoyed the conversation today as much as I did, and hope that you'll come back and get the next one in another couple of days. So with that, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time, and can't wait to talk to you again in the not too distant future. Take care, guys.